Welcome to the My Buddy Green podcast. I'm Jason Wachob, founder and co-CEO of My Buddy Green, and your host. If you're a listener of this show, you know how critical maintaining lean muscle mass is as you age. And that's why I am so excited that we've launched our grass-fed whey protein isolate plus in vanilla and chocolate. It is clean and pure grass-fed protein with no fillers, and it's got 25 grams of bioavailable complete protein, including leucine, the critical amino acid which you need to maintain and build lean muscle mass. I take our protein powder twice a day, every day. I love it, and I know you will too. So go to shop.mindbodygreen.com/whey20 to get 20% off your first order of grass-fed whey protein isolate plus. Yes, Gigi Ashworth eats 12 pounds of salmon per week. Would you expect anything less from someone known as the Salmon Queen? You, like me, probably have questions. Is one type of salmon better than another? How does she not get bored of seafood? Does she worry about mercury levels? And of course, why on earth does she eat so much salmon? Gigi answers all of this and more in today's episode. She has a master's certificate in nutrition communications from Tufts, and her struggle with autoimmune disease led her to a passion for allergen-friendly and keto-approved recipes, which she shares with her thriving community on her Instagram page, at Gigi Eats. She has a fascinating personal story, and even if you don't like salmon, I promise you'll take away something new in this very special episode. So you are literally the salmon queen.
Yes.
Yes, you are. As you eat 12 pounds of salmon a week and have done so for the past 10 years, which is a great lead in to your personal story. So let's start with the big why behind all this salmon.
Yeah. So, you know, I started eating so much salmon because when I was about 14 years old, I was diagnosed with a whole bunch of autoimmune diseases and food allergies and intolerances. And so I was eliminating foods left and right. My mom actually introduced me to the ketogenic lifestyle back when I was 14. And I was reading this book and it was telling me, you know, to eliminate grains and all of that other stuff. And so I started to do so, but then I started incorporating other foods like salmon, for instance. And I realized that salmon is what makes me feel so good, regardless. Like, I might have an issue where my stomach is hurting so badly, but then I know I need to eat something because I am, in fact, hungry. It's a weird juxtaposition of whatever events that happens in my intestines. So I'll eat and I'll feel amazing when I have the salmon. And every single time I eat salmon, I just feel like a million bucks. And then on top of that, it's so healthy for you. And I have done so much research and just, I feel really, really good about eating it. And my body craves it. Like right now, I cannot wait to eat salmon for lunch.
So walk us through, at age 14, how was autoimmune showing up for you? What did that look like in your daily life?
Yeah, so I actually went to boarding school when I was 14. I went to boarding school for snowboarding. I was on the Colorado State snowboard team. And when I was there doing dry land training, which is what you do prior to the season open, and then you're, you know, hiking the half pipe and all that kind of stuff during the season. But when I was doing dry land training, I started to really not feel that great. And mind you, prior to going to boarding school, I was on the track team and all that kind of stuff. So I was very physically active. But for some reason, I just felt off. And my mom, who's a doctor, she was recommending certain things. I got tested and it was showing up positive for autoimmune diseases. I have ulcerative colitis and I have Crohn's as well. And then I have a bunch of food allergies that were also tested. And, you know, I'm allergic to wheat and dairy and gluten and sugar and soy and nuts and eggs and all of it. So my diet is very limited, which is, you know, a lot of people think that's unfortunate. But since I love salmon so much, I really don't care. If it was going to happen to anyone, I'm glad it happened to me. That being said, it happening at the age of 14 was kind of difficult because, you know, back then when you're a teenager and you're with a whole bunch of other teenagers who are eating, you know, Pop-Tarts or whatever they're eating, you kind of want to indulge in those things as well, but you can't. And then if you do, you sort of, quote unquote, poison yourself, if you will. But I also have a really, really, really strong willpower. So, you know, there are people that I know who have autoimmune diseases like celiac or Crohn's or whatever. And they're like, oh, but I really want a cheat day. And they'll eat, you know, foods that aggravate their system. I will never do that because I know how badly I feel if I do. And I also just know that I'm poisoning myself, and that's the last thing that I would want to do. So that's sort of what it looked like back in the day. And then my mom really, really helped me navigate the waters. I mean, it definitely came with eating disorders, just because, you know, when you're that young and impressionable, you go through stages of cutting everything out because you don't know what you can control, what you can't control. But again, with my strong willpower and my strong mentality, I have to, you know, pat myself on the back for that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, thank you.
That's difficult.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult. And it's interesting because I do talk to a lot of people who suffer from eating disorders or have food allergies and intolerances, and I understand how their mind works. And I try really hard to offer any sort of wisdom if they ask for it, and you know, they see this different perspective when I tell them, you know, the thoughts that I have for them and the approaches that they should potentially take, and it's eye opening to them. So I feel like I'm helping other people.
What are some of those thoughts? If someone listening maybe has autoimmune and maybe has developed a bit of an eating disorder, like I'd say briefly, because I think this could be an entire, you know, couple hour episode, like what's some of the high level advice you provide to someone who's maybe struggling here?
It's not a broad sort of thing that I could just simply say, oh, this is what you should do, because everyone's so specific. Most of the time, I try to tell people that at the end of the day, what's most important in life? And then I have them list the most important things that they have going on in their life. And I try to, you know, really emphasize that they need to focus on the things that are truly important. Obviously, eating and food and health and well-being are very, very important. But, you know, what I find to be even more important is my family and my loved ones and what I wake up for in the morning. For me, my drive is connected to what I do for work. I'm very career motivated, and I like that's my focus. I'm never not working, and I my husband is the exact same way, and it works because we feed off of each other's motivational energy, and it just, you know, makes me feel like, okay, my focus, obviously my life and my work revolves around food, but I'm not obsessed with it like I was when I was younger, like measuring portions and logging calories and oh, that one little teaspoon of whatever is going to make a difference. Like I really, that's actually a tip that I do give a lot of people. I tell them, remove any food scales you have in your home. Quit weighing yourself, because numbers do not define who you are as a person, and really just focus on how you feel. And it's all about, you know, making like you have to treat yourself like your own guinea pig. So for me, it was like, okay, I need to eliminate this to see how I feel. If it doesn't cause any sort of issue, then I can bring it back and then I'll eliminate something else. People seem to be too scared to do that, or they just don't want to get rid of, say, the bread, if you will, because they're like, oh, there's nothing else to replace it. But keep an open mind, because there is, especially being at 2024 now. I started this ketogenic lifestyle when I was 14, which is a million years ago. Don't even want to tell my age. But it was so long ago, and keto and carnivore and paleo weren't things. I mean, like the Atkins diet was sort of around, it was kind of being talked about, but, you know, as the years progressed, I've just seen this progression in, you know, ketogenic products and stuff like that. I'll always remember stevia. I was using stevia way back in the day. It was like my sweetener. And I always wished that drinks would just be sweetened with stevia. And lo and behold, here we are. So it's there's so many options for people out there these days. They just have to be open-minded to wanting to better themselves.
Yes. And on that note, I'm curious, you know, you mentioned keto and carnivore, and you tend to think of super high fat and heavy on animal products. You know, you're the salmon queen. You know, there's the infamous liver king, you know. Little crazy pants, but you know, I think you tend to hear of people going full on carnivore. I'm curious, did you ever experiment with carnivore, or you just fell right into salmon?
I mean, to be fair, carnivore lifestyle is what I should be consuming. Fiber, vegetables, fruits, all that sort of thing, they do not work for me. My stomach hates me if I eat anything like that. So really, I have to say that my lifestyle is very keto-vore. And the reason why I say it's keto-vore is because I do eat spinach and I do eat butter lettuce. And occasionally I might eat green beans or asparagus. Like today we're having Thanksgiving and there's going to be green beans. I know that. And I'm sure I'll have some. But like I would never indulge in the corn or the potatoes or anything like that because I just know those do not work for me. But my diet really is salmon and some leafy green of some sort, not lettuce or anything like that, because lettuce itself, like romaine lettuce, doesn't work. Butter lettuce does work. Spinach does work. It's very weird. But again, I treated myself like a guinea pig to see what works and what doesn't. And it comes down to these little minute things that people are like, wait, really? That makes a difference? And it absolutely does. Just like I feel like if I could pinpoint what type of eggs would work for me, then I would be fine. But, you know, there's just this umbrella of eggs are eggs. But it really comes down to what the chicken was fed in order to, you know, enhance the properties of the egg that it's laying. So I truly believe in that. That's why, you know, I'm really specific with the type of salmon that I eat. I'm really specific with the type of beef that I eat and the chicken and stuff like that. Like I'm always asking questions and sometimes people are like, you're a little picky. And I'm like, there's reasons behind that.
Yeah. And I wanted to just take a moment and emphasize that, you know, to the audience, you've got a couple of big reasons why you eat the way you eat. There's some people who say, oh, it's super restrictive, but you're restrictive because you have to be in order to feel good, given your autoimmune issues. And I wanted to spend a moment on getting to the source. I thought this was interesting. I'll share a personal anecdote. A friend of mine here in Miami, his daughter was allergic to soy, and she would break out when they had eggs. And it didn't matter if the eggs were pasture raised, like clean label, like somehow it was something was happening there until they started producing their own eggs. And it was interesting in that I'm like, this makes no sense because, you know, pasture raised egg, like somehow something was getting into the eggs they were buying on the shelf, no matter how clean or quote unquote perfect the label was, but it wasn't occurring when they actually produced the eggs themselves on there. And they don't even have like a big, it's like a small piece of property. So I thought that was interesting.
And you do make a valid point because my son, one of my sons has no problems, but then the other son, he has eczema all over his body. He breaks out in hives constantly. He needs EpiPens, all of this stuff. And we can't quite figure out what the issues are. I mean, we know eggs for sure and we know nuts for sure, but everything else is sort of a question mark. But my husband keeps saying, I think he's allergic to soy. And unfortunately, when it comes to kid food and kid products, everything has soy in it. So it's really, really annoying, especially because my older son can eat everything. So then my younger son sees that and he's like, I want it. So he'll have a meltdown. So it's like trying to find that alternative that doesn't have soy in it, which is next to impossible. So that would be an interesting experiment if I could figure out eggs for him too, to see if there was some sort of association.
In terms of other seafood, does anything else work for you? I tend to think of, you know, smash, sardines, mackerel, anchovies, salmon, obviously, and herring.
Oh, they're all my favorite. I love all fish.
Okay.
Yeah, I love all fish. I love all seafood except for uni. I do not like sea urchin. No, thank you. But I have noticed that if I eat shellfish, I tend to get very puffy. It's a very weird feeling. I wouldn't say that I break out in hives, but I feel it in my face. It's like I swell up. Like if you eat too much salt and you wake up the next morning and you're like, whoa, okay, I feel funky right now. That's how I feel for like 3 days after I eat any sort of shellfish. And it just occurred to me I've known this for a while, but last week I was in Los Angeles and I went to one of my favorite sushi restaurants and I got this like crab roll thing that had no rice and it had salmon on top, whatever. It was amazing. I actually would love to eat it again right now. But I ate this whole roll. And then the next couple of days I was telling my friend, I'm like, I feel a lot bigger than I know that I am. And it just feels very uncomfortable. And then I put two and two together and I'm like, I ate crab. Of course, this is what the problem is. Another thing that happens to me too is I get really bad bags under my eyes. And that's a telltale sign that there's something going on with your diet.
So what's your view on like getting to these conclusions? Like how accurate do you think allergy testing is? And what do you recommend to someone who's starting to think like, maybe there's some patterns here. Maybe I should get a test.
Yeah, no, I think the first thing that I think people should do is take notes. I have like a detailed little journal in my phone after a lot of things that I eat that I don't typically eat. I'll like jot down a little note of like when I ate this food just to see if like, you know, in a couple of days it causes something to happen. Like for instance, broccoli. I know broccoli will make me tired in 2 days.
Wow.
And it's so weird. And then with eggs, I know with eggs, initially it did the same thing where in 2 or 3 days, I would be so tired. I could not get off the couch tired. Like I would force myself to work out because that's just like what I do. But then the rest of the day, I'm like, I can't move. I can't move. It's exhausting. But now eggs also cause a whole bunch of stomach issues too, just hurt so badly. But number one, take notes. And if you see the same sort of correlation happening, if you eat the same that food again in like a week or so, then it could be the right time to hit up an allergist and be like, hey, I think I want to get an allergy test. Now, I'm not going to lie. These skin tests are very expensive if you don't have good health insurance. So just mind you, everybody. The one thing that I don't really recommend, I mean, it's a nice way to start, but like it's also kind of a waste of money, is these online kits that you can buy and you prick yourself and you take your blood and they'll test it. I don't really trust those all that much just because some don't even test foods. Like, for instance, I haven't had dairy in a very, very long time. So when I take one of those tests, it tells me I'm not allergic to dairy, but that's because I don't have any dairy in my system. So they can't test anything. So those tests, I say use caution and, you know, grain of salt situation. So I would prefer people get the allergy skin test, which I did. I got it all down my back and it was awesome. I literally had like a mountain range of problems on my back.
What does that skin test look like? Is that like a non-invasive quick test or what does that look like for someone interested?
Yeah, I went to the facilities and they had me lay down on, you know, the doctor chair or whatever. And they basically just pricked my back with all of these different types of allergens, a very small dose. But they just, you know, went down my back. I have a photo I could like show you.
We'll put a link. We'll put a link to the photo on the show notes. I think people are curious.
Yeah, I posted on it on social media because I thought it was funny. But they just prick your back with all of these really high known allergens. And then I asked for specific ones as well, just because I had a feeling. And lo and behold, my entire back was just this red dot system and it was very itchy. And then afterward, they give you Zyrtec or, a drug to, you know, decrease all of that, But the interesting thing that happened to me is I was so allergic to all of these things, including basically going outside. I'm allergic to like all these trees and grass and shrubs. And I'm like, cool, I need to live in a bubble.
Got to move to the desert.
Exactly. That's the thing. I used to live on the West Coast in like Colorado, high altitude, whatever. Now I'm in Georgia and, you know, I'm allergic to everything in Georgia, apparently. So the interesting thing that happened is 2 days after I had this allergy test, I got a fever of like 103 and I was just like out cold and my body went through the motions of being insanely sick, hot flashes, cold flashes. I couldn't get out of bed. And this happened for a couple of days. And then I suffered from like a head cold, but it wasn't obviously a head cold. It was attributing to my body trying to regulate itself from having been pricked so much. So you got to proceed with caution because that sort of thing can happen. Or you can always go in and test for like five things. And then in a couple weeks, go back and test for another five things just so your body has time to regenerate itself. And, you know, I just decided to go full shebang.
So I'm curious, other than, you know, feeling fatigue or bloated or just off, I'm curious, do you have any wearables that you track? Like,
what do you mean wearables?
Wearables. So like I have an Aura and a Whoop. I'm curious.
I have an Aura ring right here. I didn't mean to flick you off or anything.
No, all good. Does that show up like when on and shows up as like a decrease in HRV and increase in RHR when like you're inflamed, when you go off diet? Like, does it show up in those metrics?
No, but honestly, my metrics are all over the place because I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning every day. So Aura Ring is like, dude, what is wrong with you? You have an imbalance of all of the things. You're not sleeping, blah, blah, blah. But I'm the type of person that excels on 4 or 5 hours of sleep at night. And I feel amazing. Like I was up this morning at 2 o'clock and I feel great. I just love that time by myself. However, my child woke me up this morning, so that was not so fun. So it's hard for me to say whether or not Aura is actually picking up on that or not. That being said, I did find something else. This company reached out to me. I think it's called Vivo, V-I-V-O-O. And it basically, they have strips and you pee on the strips and it tells you more than just your ketones. Because usually that's how people, you know, find out their ketones when they start in the keto world. And it tells you your oxidative stress levels. It tells you whether or not you have enough magnesium and calcium and all this kind of stuff, which is, to me, I find that very fascinating. So when I saw that, like my oxidative stress levels were okay for the first 2 weeks, like they were optimal. But then the third week came around because you're supposed to test like once a week. The third test came around and it was like a 6 out of 10. And I'm like, what's going on here? But I didn't really associate it with any sort of food changes or anything like that. So when I get more tests, I'm going to start putting or connecting those dots and see.
Yeah. You know, so my little N of one experiment I've been doing for the past 45 days or so, I have dramatically increased my intake of fish. So I'm not doing 12 pounds of salmon, but I'm up there.
I'm proud of you.
Yes. And decreased my consumption of meat, chicken, eggs, and dairy. And I've also started to be more mindful around saturated fat, specifically the C16 fatty acid, which is, you know, coconut milk, coconut oil, palm oil, because I'm an over absorber. So like, I like it, it's not good for me. And so I will start to reintroduce all of these things to see what happens at various points in time. But in terms of how it shows up for me, my Aura score in terms of HRV and RHR has like never been higher. So like, to give you an example, like some metrics, what I found, my yearly, like last year, I finished the year, I think at 89 HRV average. This year I'm at 115. My RHR last year was 45 for the year average. This year I'm at 42 and I'm getting older. So obviously, so like there's a lot of things that like I can't point to any other things. So that's why I was asking about like, can this show up? And like, so we'll see. I'll continue the experiment. I'll keep our audience informed of what I find because I'm going to start to add these things back to see what happens because I don't have autoimmune. So like when I say to anyone doing an elimination diet, try to add things back too. And then like, you know, you just don't want to eliminate and never try.
Absolutely. It's all about trial and error, as I continually say. What's your seafood fish of choice?
I love salmon too. You know, I do. I love sliced, I'll say wild, but we're going to get to farmed in a second because that's an important point.
Oh, you know that I
know, but I love your POV. So I love salmon, whether that's sliced salmon that's cold and I'll put on, I'm fine with bread, a slice of sourdough or cooked wild salmon or a wild salmon burger. And then I love sardines.
Oh my God, I love sardines too. I love them.
And then I'm, you know, pretty good on mackerel, herring, okay. And I just kind of really like seafood. I'll kind of, oysters, unless I'm going to a very nice restaurant, kind of scare me.
I eat them from the can. I don't like raw ones. I like canned oysters.
I struggled with parasites a long time ago. So like I went kind of through the ringer with that. So I'm just like, I'll avoid oysters. But
oh, well, that's good to know. Because when we talk about wild versus farm-raised salmon, I've got some things about parasites to tell you.
Let's go there because you've also been vocal about this on social media. You say you buy farmed. And in our world, and we tend to talk about wild all the time. So let's talk about farmed.
Yeah. So farming of salmon started in the 1960s. And back then, you know, obviously they could just do whatever because it was so fresh, so new. So they could feed the fish anything. And then, of course, if you feed the fish anything, they're going to get sick and there's going to be other contaminants in the water. So you're going to give them antibiotics and you're going to give them some other stuff to, you know, make sure they're quote unquote healthy enough before they get, you know, sliced up and served to you, if you will. So that has all changed. I mean, obviously, not every farm is the exact same, but these days, there's so many regulations by the FDA that you have to do X, Y, and Z, Q, R, S, or else your product will not go to market. And then there's a whole bunch of different organizations that have protocol, and all of these salmon farms, and again, I'm not saying every single one, but I'm just going to use the term all of them. These salmon farms want to be a part of these programs because it's like the organic label. It's like, I want to be part of the organic label because it looks better. It's more marketable, but I have to do X, Y, Z, Q, R, S in order to get there. And it's very strict, very stringent. And, you know, these farms also want to sell you the best product. So me personally, what I do is when I eat my farm salmon, I'm researching up the wazoo, what they're fed, how they maintain the cleanliness of the pens, their sustainability, all of those things I research and I take into account. So I have a list of suppliers that I regularly turn to and I, you know, recommend them to my friends, family, followers, whomever asks. And they're also very readily available at the store. So
can you give us a few?
Yeah. So Quarry Arctic is my number one choice. They sell at Whole Foods.
Quarry Arctic.
It's spelt funny because it's an Arctic brand, but it's K-V-O-R-Y. So initially I was calling it Cavroy and they were like, nah, that's not how you say it. But it's Quarry Arctic and they sell to Whole Foods. So that Atlantic salmon that you see at Whole Foods, it's either Quarry Arctic, which is on the West Coast, or Blue Circle, which is on the East Coast. But they're both top-notch companies that I highly recommend. I also highly recommend Moe Salmon, which is sold at Target. They also sell and distribute to Aldi and Trader Joe's and Walmart and Costco as well. And I just did a tour of their facility in Florida, actually. I think it's in like Medley, Florida. And that was a really fascinating experience that I absolutely loved. Their quality is top notch. And then Baca Frost is another one. And Baca Frost, they actually have an online website. And I have to say, they're one of the most affordable online salmon suppliers out there. Because a lot of other websites that you go to, if you want to buy seafood online, they up the price like no one's business. And it's shocking. I do the math all the time. I'm like, you're better off just going to the grocery store and getting your salmon there.
I buy a lot of Vital Choice.
Vital Choice and I go way back to when I was 13, 14, 15, because my mom was ordering it up the wazoo. Their Chilean sea bass and their black cod. Yes. So good. And I've worked with them a lot in the past. It's just, it's fun to talk about that because we go way back. Anyway, so, but Vital Choice is very expensive. It's very expensive. Their sardines and mackerel are top notch though. So good. So anyway, those are my top favorite brands. There's other ones like Hidden Fjord I love. But then I have actual seafood markets that I tend to turn to, like Fulton Fish Market. They're based in New York, but they sell and distribute worldwide to, you know, and they send it right to your front door. Another one called Yama Seafood. They're also based in New York. That's where I actually get my salmon skin from. But their salmon is Baca Frost salmon. So obviously Baca Frost supplies it to them and then they sell it out, but they, you know, upcharge, obviously. So I like to go right to the source versus going to the seafood markets and, you know, having to deal with the extra cost. However, it's not always a plausible way to go. Like if you went to Quarry Arctic, they would say, hey, you have to go to Whole Foods to get my salmon, or you have to go to Thrive Market because they do sell on Thrive Market. And then Blue Circle, they sell on their website or they sell their product at Whole Foods as well. Like you can go to the freezer section and get the portions of salmon that way.
I think between Target, Whole Foods, and Thrive Market, most of America is covered. So very, very helpful. Thank you. So you mentioned wild and parasites. Talk to me. What should I look for? What should we look for? Because having been through the ringer with parasites, you've got my attention.
Okay, so I don't know if you've heard or seen videos back in the day, but, you know, you see the fish at like Costco. People are like, oh my God, the fish at Costco has got parasites. Well, that's wild salmon. That's not farm-raised salmon. And the reason why wild salmon is more susceptible to having parasites is because it's not as regulated. With farm-raised salmon, they can test their fish to see the mercury content. They can see if the fish has parasites. They are monitoring their fish 24/7. Whereas wild-caught salmon, you're just catching it and you're filleting it and then you're selling it. I mean, obviously they might flash freeze it or something like that too if they're shipping it to, you know, the States, if it's caught in Alaska, for instance. But again, wild caught salmon is more susceptible to having the parasites. So you really have to take precaution. You've got to check your fish before you buy it and then freeze it. You've got to freeze it before you can thaw it and then eat it. And obviously you also need to cook it all the way through. You need to kill the parasites. You know, it's very rare that you see wild caught sashimi on a Japanese menu because of that issue, the parasites.
So just a clarifying question. I'm glad you pointed this out. One, cook, if you're having the fish, cook the fish, because if you cook the fish, you don't have a parasite problem. And also, we're really talking about fish that's kind of like an open air on display. Because if you're buying something that's packaged and frozen, you're going to alleviate the issue if there was one. This is more around like open fish and wild fish in an open air environment that you're then not eating cooked. So I don't want everyone to freak out because I've seen the videos and I'm like, oh, there's videos for everything. That's helpful.
Anything negative is published somewhere.
Yes, but that's helpful. So you mentioned mercury. How do you manage or think about mercury exposure? That's something where if you eat, people will maybe think too much about.
Oh, yeah. I actually have a whole little section in my book, Seduced by Salmon, about mercury. And I'm like, now you guys might be thinking about whether or not I'm going to die from mercury. Because let's be real. People slide into my DMs on Instagram and they're like, are you poisoned by mercury? I'm like, no, I'm not. Because salmon is one of the lowest in mercury content. You know, I avoid swordfish. I avoid shark. I avoid all of the high mercury content fish. Those are the bigger fish, the fish that live the longest because they have more time to absorb the mercury into their flesh. But salmon is very, very low in the mercury world. And I actually calculated it. I don't have the calculations off the top of my head. It's in my book. But I calculated how much mercury on average I would eat a week. And I am under the regulation I'm going to use the word requirement. There's no requirement for eating mercury, but I am under what the FDA says is acceptable for consumption, even with my 12 pounds of salmon a week. Now, that's just 12 pounds of salmon. I also eat other fish as well throughout the week too. So, I mean, obviously I might be going up there a little bit more, but again, I'm still under and I feel amazing. I don't have any sort of symptoms from that mercury poisoning would typically show, like my hair isn't falling out. I'm not super tired or anything. And if I'm tired, it's most likely from my ulcerative colitis and stuff like that.
So if salmon is by far and away your number one, do you have a number two?
Oh my God. Yes. I love eel.
Wow. Okay.
I love eel. It's so good. There's a company called American Unagi. For the longest time, you could only get eel with all of that sugary sauce that Japanese restaurants sell it with.
Right. I think of sushi. I think of eel. I think of sushi roll. I think sushi.
Yes. So when you go to like a Japanese market, they usually sell it already barbecued with all that sauce all over it. When I was younger, I used to take it and I would wash it and I would soak it in water to get all of that off because I love eel so much. But now there's this company called American Unagi that sells eel completely naked of all of those ingredients. So it's just eel and it is, oh my gosh, so good. I made a video about it and I compared it to eating pita bread, but it was like sweet pita bread because I air fried it. And so it was like a nice crunchy exterior, but the interior was nice and moist. And it's just, it's on a whole other playing field of deliciousness.
So you've talked about sushi grade being somewhat misleading. Tell us more about quote unquote sushi grade.
There really is no such thing as sushi grade. There is no regulation in terms of what's sushi grade and what's not. At the end of the day, the regulation is that all fish has to be frozen to a specific temperature for about 2 days, and then it can be thawed and can be consumed raw. That is the regulation in the United States. Now, in Japan, they don't have any such rules.
So on that note, if I'm going out to eat at a restaurant, or perhaps it's more specifically a sushi restaurant, are there specific questions you would recommend someone ask about the fish that it reasonable, that won't set the server like in a tizzy?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, you can simply ask, you know, where did the fish come from? Typically, they'll say a market in Japan. And secondly, you can just ask, was this previously frozen? Those are really the only two questions you need to know. And then, of course, if you go to a sushi restaurant that has, you know, a 3-star rating and it's got a C rating in terms of the health code, well, you may not want to eat there.
That's the one area, again, like my history with parasites. If we're doing sushi, we're going to go to a place that's expensive. Like I will never do... And let me just pack up expensive, like the sushi restaurant with a very good reputation. I will never get like grab and go sushi at a deli.
Is that where you got the parasite from?
No, I actually think I got it from open air salad bars. I was eating a lot of salads at the time. And like also this is going back like in the 2010s in New York when like unpasteurized juice was like huge. And so I was having a lot of like unpasteurized juice and then having a lot of salads, like open air salad bars. Like I didn't go to Africa. I didn't go to any country, like third world country. Like, and so that's where I'm pretty sure you don't know 100%. But I'm pretty sure that's where it happened.
Speaking of Africa, I did go to Africa one time and they had some of the most deliciously clean food I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah. So that's reasonable eating out. And the reality is if you're going to a nice place and the fish is coming from Japan, they literally have to freeze it to ship it. Like they're not.
Exactly.
So do you have a go-to favorite recipe at home when you're in a pinch?
I mean, the funny thing is my go-to favorite thing to do is just air fry salmon. It's very simple, very basic. I don't love sauces. I don't love seasonings. I like to taste my food as opposed to hiding it under, you know, a whole bunch of garlic or a whole bunch of barbecue sauce or whatever people are doing. So I literally throw my salmon in the air fryer, 400 for 28. And a lot of people are like, oh my God, that's so hot. And that's such a long temperature or it's such a long time. And I'm like, well, Atlantic salmon is far fattier than wild salmon. Thus, you really can't overcook it. Granted, I'm also the type of person that likes her salmon all the way cooked through. So if you like it a little bit more rare, just do it for a little less time at 400 degrees. But it's my tried and true method. I have a little hashtag for it on Instagram, hashtag 400 for 28. And everybody who's like, oh, what are you talking about? That's not going to work. When they do it, they're sold. They totally change their opinion and mind. They look at me and they like bow down. They're like, oh my God. They're like, oh, salmon queen. I'm like, oh, thank you. But seriously, it's amazing. Now I must preface and say the portion size of the salmon should probably be anywhere between 9 and, you know, 16 ounces.
That's getting you a lot of protein. If you're doing a 16 ounce salmon, that was at like 40, 50 grams of protein.
Hello. That's what I do. I'm a very high protein girl.
So I noticed you said air fryer. Why is there a reason why air fryer and not conventional oven?
Air fryer is just quicker, honestly. And I mean, I used to do the oven until I was introduced to an infomercial in 2015 and it was an air fryer. And I'm like, that's happening.
At 2 a.m. You were up at, you woke up at 2 a.m. and the infomercial struck.
How did you know?
So conventional oven, what would you do? Would that be 400, 425 for 15, 20 minutes?
I broil in there because I like the crispy. The crispy texture is, I'm a crispy texture person. So for me, that's the approach I take. But you got to move the rack down a little bit because otherwise you're going to burn the top of your salmon. And you also have to flip it midway through the process because you got to have the crispy skin, but you don't want that crispy skin to burn.
I take that gray skin off. Is that okay?
No, skin is like the best part in my personal. I actually buy just salmon skin and I make it all the time. But my preferred way of making it these days, just pan frying it. It's real crispy and it's so good. Highly recommend you try it next time.
So pan fry, I'm assuming it's like a couple minutes, little olive oil in there.
Yeah, I would do, you know, 3 minutes on one side, 3 on another, and use the, what do you want to call it, the tongs. And just, you know, you can tell when it's done, basically.
What are you cooking in olive oil?
For me personally, I don't even use any oil because it's sort of like bacon in that it produces so much oil that it doesn't stick to the pan.
Interesting. I'm going to try that. I've got my freezer full of salmon. I am very excited to try that one out.
Yeah. I mean, if you're using wild, I would recommend maybe using a little avocado oil or a little olive oil just to, you know, make sure because it's less fatty, but it's nonetheless, the skin is still going to be amazing.
Love it. So what is your hope with your work, with your message? What do you want people to take away from all the fantastic work you're doing, whether it's in your website or on social media? What is your hope?
You know, my hope is to really tell people that if you're diagnosed with food allergies, intolerances, autoimmune diseases, it's not a death sentence. And I try to make people see the positive in everything. I'm a very glass half full perspective type of person. And I also have this way of just, you know, kind of making a joke about everything. I'm very do-do-do, like, I'm, you know, dancing to the beat of my own drummer sort of person. And the amount of people who will, you know, message me or email me or whatever, telling me like, thank you for like lighting my day. And I didn't even do anything crazy. I just, you know, said my opinion about something, but I said it with a smile on my face. And even though a lot of times when I'm, you know, talking on camera or talking to people in general, or whatever, like I don't actually feel good. Like my stomach hurts or something's going on in there that, you know, that's just, that comes with the territory. But I still put a happy face on because I know that there's worse out there. I have all of my limbs. I have a great family, amazing support system. I'm doing what I love. So I just try to really emphasize that people need to focus on the good in their lives and offer the advice if they ask for it. I mean, another thing that I live for is to really educate people on the healthiness of salmon. Whether people like wild caught or farm raised is, you know, a preference at this point. I don't think people should really poo-poo farm raised salmon like they're doing. And, you know, all these damn Netflix documentaries coming out saying that farm salmon is the worst thing ever. And I'm just like, okay, that is such dated research. You guys need to really actually get to the hard facts of today's age. So that's really frustrating. And especially when big, big influencers are like walking around Costco or walking around a grocery store and they see farm salmon and then they start, you know, talking smack about it, if you will. And I'm just like, you guys are showing off the fact that you're not educated in the fish world and you really should not say anything. If you don't have the education to back up your claims, Just don't go there. You know, everyone's a nutrition expert these days. Even if they didn't go to school, they're like, oh, I went to, you know, online Phoenix healthcare website and I earned my bachelor's in nothing. Like, I don't know. They're the claims people create themselves these days. It's very hard to choose what information to actually trust and believe.
Yes. And I think, look, when you think about all the foods available and all the conflicting and strong opinions on foods, I would say if you take out the ethical vegan community, everyone kind of agrees salmon is an amazing food. So if you're going to pick one food, salmon's a pretty good one to indulge in. And, you know, we believe food is medicine and sometimes medicine is salmon.
Oh, it's always my medicine.
So I'd be remiss to not ask, you mentioned your husband, and this is another fascinating side of you. Your husband's a PhD astrophysicist who's very open about his autism and now works as an actor and produces commercials. Like, you talk about what an interesting couple you are. So let's spend a moment talking about your husband.
I'm like, should I go get him? He loves talking about himself. Now, my husband, he is a different creature. That's the only way to describe him. He is so unique in every way. The man knows how to do everything. I swear to God, if someone said, hey, can you give birth? He would figure out a way to do it. He is that person who will, if he is asked to do something, he is gonna do it regardless of his skill set. He will figure out how to do it and it happens. He is so insanely talented. And the reason why I believe he's such a good actor is early on in life, he was bullied for having autism because back when he was diagnosed, you know, autism obviously was not a big thing. It didn't even really become so, quote unquote, relevant until up a couple of years ago. But, you know, he was bullied because he was, quote unquote, weird and awkward and not socially acceptable or whatever. And so when he would go to therapy, they were, you know, encouraging him to take acting classes. And he really focused on that and studied the neurotypicals. He just would, you know, sit on a park bench and just watch people interact. He watches movies and TV shows and he sees how they interact. Obviously, movies and TV shows are, you know, not always realistic, but that still aided him in figuring out what a neurotypical mindset is like. So he's like, honestly, sometimes I'm like, I don't know if you're being true to who you are right now or if you're totally acting for me. Like, I always tell him, you know, you're always allowed to let your guard down around me and stuff. But being that he was bullied back in the day, I still think that he holds a little bit of a front up. Like, you know, there are some mannerisms that autistic people have where it's like they have to continually do this or, you know, fidget or something, or maybe they have to scream or they have a weird tick or whatever. He's been really good at hiding those things. I encourage him to, you know, be who he is 110%. But, you know, he sometimes just has little things that he wants to keep to himself. That being said, since I met him about 10 years ago, he is a completely different person. And I don't want to say that I take full credit, but I think part of it is I have encouraged him to just be himself, because when I first met him, he put on this guise of, I'm, you know, the greatest thing ever or whatever. And obviously it was sort of a defense mechanism to, you know, ward away all of the quote negative people who would make fun of him or whatever. And I'm like, Landon, look, you need to be who you are, because I fell in love with you as the person. I didn't fall in love with your bravado or whatever this fucking, excuse my French, but whatever this character is that you are putting on. I fell in love with you, and everybody who knows you falls in love with you, not this. So you got to do you. And since getting on social media and finally feeling comfortable with himself, he is finally talking about being autistic and very open about it. And I feel like that's a very therapeutic for him, because finally people are encouraging him to continue pursuing his dreams. They're not bullying him. In fact, when his first video of he creates these little videos where he's a Texas toddler and he's talking to his dad, who's not Texan. So this kid is basically pretending to be a Texan. The first video that he did went completely viral. He went from 42,000 followers to now 800,000 followers in the course of 4 or 5 months. Insane. The growth that he went from 42,000 followers to 500,000 followers in a month. Like, it was absolutely bananas. Every single video he does gets more than 1 million views. It's insane. So it was just, for me, I was just, I almost like have tears of happiness for him, because finally people are seeing the person that I know and the talent that I know that I felt like had been ignored for so long. Because, you know, being in the acting world, there's just oh so many fish in the sea who are trying to get to the same place, you know, being that A-list movie star, whatever it is. So it's really hard to, you know, make your way out. But I feel like his going viral and continually, you know, going viral has been helping him actually be seen, which is just, it's the best thing on the world, in the face of the planet. And every single comment that he gets, because I go through the comments, because for some reason they like feed me happy energy. I go through the comments. He doesn't really do that because he's a little too busy. They're all nice. They're all positive. I think there were like 2 negative ones that happened the other day and he mistakenly read them and then, of course, got real sad. Or sad in the autistic.
Which most people do. You know, I think most of us.
Like, that's the thing. I wouldn't necessarily call it sad, though, because autistic people are, this is me just categorizing them all as one, but everybody is, you know, on the spectrum. But for him personally, he doesn't get sad. I think he was more frustrated because he hates bullying so much. And he's like, what is the point? There is no logical point. And for him, his brain, just like the majority of autistic people, it's all about logic. It's not about emotion. So he always is trying to seek logic in every single thing that happens in life. Like, if I am, quote unquote, PMSing or something like that, he's like, this isn't logical. And I'm like, we're not going to go there, because there really is no logic to hormonal issues. They're just, you know, they cause emotions that I don't know how to handle. And we're just going to walk away. Granted, I'm really like being with him for the last 10 years, I have to admit that I feel like I'm an honorary autistic, because I have adopted so many of his mannerisms and his way of thinking that I love. I think that I have bettered myself over the last 10 years, because thinking logically makes so much more sense thinking with emotions doesn't get you very far.
So on that note, I think autism is often misunderstood. What do you want everyone to know about autism when they encounter a child or an adult who is living with autism? What should we all know?
Pardon my French, but autistics are not assholes. They are just very straightforward. They are going to tell you the truth. They are going to tell you the things that you need to know.
That sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. I don't like when people lie to each other. They're like, oh, girl, you look good in that dress. It's like, no, she doesn't. I mean, I don't know who we're talking about, but like, you know, there are moments where you need to be truthful and tell her like, hey, the dress doesn't accentuate your curves as well as this one would. Like, you just have to be honest with people. And that's what autistics are. They're very honest to the point that sometimes people think they are very rude or mean. And I mean, there are moments where I'm like, okay, Landon, like, back off. And he's like, I didn't say anything wrong. And I'm like, to be fair, you didn't say anything wrong, but you know, I don't know if I want to hear it right now.
Fascinating.
But I appreciate it though. And that is my number one, you know, takeaway or advice for people who encounter autistic people. You know, like, they're going to be very straightforward with you, and you need to have thick skin, honestly, if you can't handle the truth.
Sage advice. Gigi, thank you so much.
Of course.